That's a good podcast co-host. One who, right before we press record, says, I'm going to try not to look at you.
I'm going to try not to look at you.
With every sun that comes up, comes the question. Where to go out on this town? Downtown Disney. It's like hitting the hot spots of every happening city on the planet. Restaurants you've read about. Shops you've dreamed about. Clubs that cut your curiosity loose. Downtown Disney. In a city of choices, the metropolis of fun.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We're going to cut our curiosity loose today on our rundown episode
eating
part
that guy
two.
Smoked when he was filming that. Also, what do you think he was wearing when he was recording that?
Oh, just like a black turtleneck?
Probably.
That's what I'm picturing.
He had a glass.
And a skinny cigarette, though. Yeah, and he had little glasses on, but not thick frame.
I'm thinking like glasses. He had a glass of like scotch or something while he was doing it, too. Oh. Come on down to the, yeah. It's like, oh, because, you know, back then that's how they did stuff. Well, really in the 70s. When was that recorded? Was that like when Springs opened?
No, it was Downtown Disney in like the 90s, yeah. I want to say.
All right, cut your curiosity. Downtown, every time it was like said downtown, I was like, Downtown Judy Brown.
So we're back. It's part two. We talked all about the story of Disney Springs in our part one episode. And we got some feedback, which was really cool to see you all kind of in the same place we were, which was like no idea.
Yeah.
Right. We just had no idea that all these things were around. So the next time you get to Springs, definitely look around, especially in the landing area. That's like the space really around like the Boathouse, Gideon's, and then the Edison, like that kind of that area. That's where those terracotta plaques are. That I know I posted to our Instagram one day. Like, that to me is like the cool stuff because I walk by them so many times. So we talked all about the storyline of what is now Disney Springs. But now with part two, we'll talk more about the actual history of Springs. Not so much the storyline history, but like the actual real life. What did Disney do from the 1970s through now? What's available? Like, what can you do with Springs? I think we all know some of the more obvious ones, but we also have a list of maybe some things that you haven't heard of or some specialty shops that I had to look up what they sold because these are some stores I've never shopped at before.
Yeah, some of these I was like, what in the world was that? And you're like, seriously, that was a store? Like,
yeah,
some of the stuff here. So we're going
to
get.
I can't wait to talk about especially some of the things from Pleasure Island, which was a wild time that obviously doesn't exist anymore. And then we also posted a question to our Instagram at That Park Life Podcast. What is your number one favorite thing to do, eat, or see at Springs? And we'll share some of those answers because those are things that we won't cover. Mm-hmm. When I haven't experienced some of these things, and I'm not sure if you have either, but there's just so much to do.
Yeah.
So I was curious to hear, like, what's your go-to thing if you are headed to Disney Springs?
Yes. And we're going to kind of chop this up by decades. So we're going to start in the 70s, then we're going to talk about the 80s, the 90s, and then we're going to talk about now. So I'm going to kick us off to the early days of the 1970s. So when this area first opened, it opened in March of 1975. And the intent there was for it to kind of be like a large outdoor mall. The first name of it was Lake Buena Vista Shopping Village, which...
Hold on. You're the only person I know, and I know a lot of people, who pronounces Buena that way.
Is it Buena? Buena? Because I say Buena.
Is that what...
I don't know. Like, I've just always heard
Lake
Buena Vista.
I want you to say it the way you want, but I meant to say it on our part one. I wonder if anyone else heard that. It's so funny to me. You keep doing it.
Okay, now we need to do a poll then that's like, do you say Buena or Buena?
I think it's Buena, like as in the
like
word,
Buena
like,
Vista.
You know.
But I swear, I feel like I've just heard either other people say Buena Vista or like, I don't know. That's just, I feel like my whole life I've like heard it as Buena Vista.
I have a coworker who pronounces Bonnet Creek, like the resort / the road that's here, as Bonnet Creek. And the first time I heard that, I was like, "That stop that right now." So you
say, but Bonnet is like more Bonnet to me sounds more accurate for like, for New Orleans.
Maybe, but I don't know. It's not a New Orleans themed hotel. I don't know what I don't know what it is, but. But you're the only person I know who says Lake Buena. I can't even say Buena.
Buena Vista.
No, that's so strange.
Lake Buena Vista.
I'm going to.
Okay, well, maybe I just say it.
Vista could be your drag
name. Maybe I'm just saying it all wrong. I'm going to try to say Buena then, okay? The okay. first name was Lake Buena Vista. It just feels weird, shopping village. In 1977, though, it was renamed as Walt Disney World Village. Much easier to say. And so we're going to talk about some of these stores that existed in the early days. So one was the Apothecary, which sold like cosmetics, film, and magazines. Because when I first read that, I was like, is that real? Like, there was a store called Apothecary, and it wasn't Rose's Apothecary.
No, just
and it's cosmetics, film, and magazines. Interesting. The Buena Vista Interiors. There you go. Buena Vista Interiors. It was a design firm that was actually led by Disney Studio head decorator Emily Curry. So that was one of the things that was over there. There was also a store called Captain's Tower. And this was an open air pavilion for special events, which included a Star Wars event in 1977. Which I bet is amazing. In October of 1977, Darth Vader appeared and interacted with guests. And we do have a photo of that that we're going to post. Don't forget, this was long before Disney owned Lucasfilm. So there were signed posters that were distributed to guests. In addition to Darth Vader, Mark Hamill himself was in attendance. But his meet and greet line was shorter and fizzled out. Oh man, people are dumb.
Yeah, he just left. Mark Hamill was like, no one wants to see me, I'm out.
Which is crazy, because he had no idea what was coming. Basically everyone was there to get a glimpse of Darth Vader. And so when you see the photo of Darth Vader walking around, it may look familiar because this location is still around. It's just called Pin Traders now. So this was the location, of that photo. So when you see that, oh, weird. Yeah. It's like the little hut area.
Yeah. I'm sharing the photo with Beth and you'll all see it too, but it's, I mean, that's straight up the Pin Traders.
But it's also like what is he about to do in this photo?
I don't know. But
and very tall.
That's Darth Vader, right? I mean, like, we don't even get like real Darth Vader meet and greets here. And this was before Disney was partnered with Lucasfilm. I think that it was such a wild time that people were lining up.
Also, I would love to hear from someone that was like, oh, no, I went and met like Mark Hamill, you know, because what a lot of people don't know about Mark Hamill is all the other stuff that he does. Like, he does a lot of voiceovers for things that like we grew up on. I think he did Batman. He did the Joker in Batman. It's crazy, too, because once you learn, like, what he's voiced over and you hear it, you're like, oh, my gosh, yeah. And you can't, like, it's very distinct. So when he does other stuff, too, you're like, oh, that's Mark Hamill. But he did, like, a lot of that stuff, too. Anyways, okay. So the next thing was a place called Michael's, and it was a barbershop. It offered haircuts and manicures for men, and it was the only store in the complex to be closed on Sundays, which was interesting. I'm surprised, like, more weren't.
I'm fascinated that there was a place that was a dedicated manicure for men place. And the reason why that is there seems to, there's still a stigma probably for men getting manicures, but this is in the 70s. And I think that was really cool.
It's for fancy men. there was a place called Pipe Dream, and this was a tobacco store that offered a quote pipe hospital to quickly heal your pooped out pipes.
Hello.
I can't believe they had pooped in the title.
Beth, when's the last time you got your pooped out pipe taken a look at?
I mean, like right before we started recording. Good. We're good. Anyway, so Pipe Dream was another one. There was also a store called Port of Entry, and this was a retail location that featured items from around the world. It later became Mickey's Character Shop, which then got combined with a later version of World of Disney, WOD. Also, if, quote, Port of Entry sounds like a familiar store, there is currently a Port of Entry store in Epcot. Yeah, when I was reading this, I was like, I feel like I've seen this somewhere. It's because there's one in Epcot. This one also sells items from around the world. So it's one of the two stores you see as you enter World Showcase from the front of the park. Point of Entry is to the right, and then Disney Traders is on the left. So that's kind of cool because it's kind of like a throwback now. You can be like, oh, yeah, Port of Entry used to be in Disney Springs, and it was a retail location. Anyways, the next one is Sir Edward's Haberdasher. So this is located across from Pipe Dream. This shop for men was named after Disney executive Edward Moriarty. Edward Moriarty. I think that's how you say his last name. It closed in March 22nd of 1992.
I was there for a while.
Yeah, obviously this was like a hat place. That's what a haberdashery is. So. Then there's Village Spirits, which was sample wines and purchase them along with beer and spirits from around the world at this location near the Apothecary and the post office. Which is,
I think it's wild they just had like a straight up liquor store.
In like Village Spirits. It sounds like you could go get your tobacco from Pipe Dream and then you could go get your drinks from, I mean, cause it was the 70s. Like, hello.
Yeah.
There were some restaurants here too. So in 1977, the Empress Lily opened. It was a full-size replica of a paddle steamer riverboat on Village Lake. We have talked about this before in previous episodes, but it was a 220 feet long and 62 feet wide, like boat replica, basically riverboat. Although it resembled a boat, it was actually just a building and it was stationary. And we talked about why it was called the Empress Lily, and that was because Walt's wife's name was Lillian. She was there the day it opened to the public to christen it. And in 1995, it ceased operations as the Empress Lily, and a third-party restaurant group took it over. So some changes were made, including the removal of smokestacks and the big paddle wheel that it had. And then it reopened as Fulton's Crab House, which I'm sure was like Lillian was probably rolling in her grave at that point. In 1996. And then 20 years later, in 2016, it closed again and is now operating as Paddlefish. So I think we've all seen Paddlefish out there. For this version, the smokestacks and the paddle wheel were added back into the design. So it's like it now looks like a boat once again. It looked like a boat.
Yeah, they kind of reinstated the original.
Yeah, then they changed it and then they brought it back. Now it's Paddlefish. So another notable restaurant at this time was simply named The Village Restaurant. Wow, good job, guys, naming that. It opened in 1975. It was a two-story building that overlooked the lagoon. It featured live jazz performers, but did not accept reservations, at least until it became more popular. It started to charge a $5 cover as it became popular with college musicians. And in 1990, the restaurant closed and reopened as Chef Mickey's. Interesting. Mickey himself was there as you dined. Sound familiar? 5 years later, it closed and made way for Rainforest Cafe. Then the Chef Mickey's that we know now loved and opened at Disney's Contemporary Resort later that year. So they basically just moved Chef Mickey's over.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Like, oh, I thought, because for some reason in my mind, I was like, Chef Mickey's always was in the Contemporary. But no, it was over at Springs.
Who knew? And even in the Contemporary, it's moved its location a little bit. But yeah, started out in the 90s.
Yeah.
1990 as Chef Mickey's over there.
So it sounded like you wanted to go to the Pipe Dream and get your pipe stuff. And then you could head over because, you know, you go smoke anywhere. And then you wanted to end your night at the Village Restaurant and get you some food and listen to some jazz music, all the good stuff.
So around the mid 80s, then CEO Michael Eisner, he along with the rest of the company, were trying to find some ways to keep more guests on Disney property for longer, and then also remove any temptation for them to seek entertainment elsewhere. So not just shopping and eating, but entertainment was also
entertainment.
Now part of their was part of their plan. So to compete with some entertainment being offered in the downtown Orlando area, at least at that time, Disney announced the addition of Pleasure Island in 1986. So they announced it in 1986, and Disney is nothing if not consistent, because it was 3 years later in 1989 when it opened. So they took a long time
Everyone.
It's coming. It's coming 3 years from now. It opened on May 1st of 1989. And if that stands out to you, it has nothing to do with the 1989 from Taylor Swift. That is the exact same date that the Disney MGM Studios park, now Hollywood Studios, opened up. So the theory at the time was that this would allow continuation of a vacation, because I guess the parks closed earlier back then. So you could go into the brand new park, Hollywood Studios or MGM Studios, leave and spend a night at Pleasure Island.
Yeah.
So what exactly did Pleasure Island include? Well, of course, it has its own storyline, which I will share with you. And this, if you're wondering, like, how did we know what the storyline was? They actually had plaques around Pleasure Island. And I'm going to read a few of some of the ones that are outside some of these restaurants or retail locations. But, like, the actual one for the island, Pleasure Island itself, and this was put there in 1989, read, quote, "A living monument to the wise fool, the mad visionary, the scoundrel, the scallywag, the seeker of enjoyment, Meriwether Adam Pleasure, who purchased the island in 1911. Pleasure's profitable canvas manufacturing and sail fabricating empire, founded on this site, provided him with the capital to indulge his lifelong interest in the exotic, the experimental, and the unexplainable." End quote for a second. We need to go back to his business was, and it was profitable, canvas manufacturing and sail fabricating.
So he made boat sails?
material that boats use for their stuff, which obviously someone did, but that's very specific. I feel like
it's exotic, the experimental, and the unexplainable. It just sounds very sexual.
It kind of does. I mean, so we'll go back to the quote. Quote, known as the Grand Funmeister, Pleasure disappeared during his 1941 circumnavigation of the Antarctic. His sons, Henry and Stuart, took over the island and the Pleasure Enterprises, so Pleasure being capital P for their last name. Their mismanagement led to bankruptcy in 1955. Hurricane Connie hit that same year, and Pleasure Island was abandoned. In 1987, archaeologists uncovered the site and its remains, and a large-scale reclamation project had begun. In 1989, the new Pleasure Island was reopened and dedicated to the legacy of Meriwether Adam Pleasure, quote, fun for all and all for fun.
Interesting.
End quote.
I never knew that it was like someone's name. I always thought it was just name, like Pleasure Island.
I wonder if they did that so that they couldn't, they didn't want it to make it seem like it was about maybe more physical pleasure or
like, no, it's about a person.
Kind of connotations.
But I mean, I guess what we're learning more and more about the industry at the time, it's not so weird.
Nope.
It's probably not really about that. Anyways, keep going.
So here are some of the shops, restaurants, and entertainment featured within Pleasure Island. And I do mean some. We could probably do like two episodes on just every single store, but I want to kind of point out some of the more interesting ones that stand out. There was a place called Superstar Studios. It was a make-your-own video studio. And here's what the plaque said outside of it. It was Mrs. Pleasure's Music Parlor originally, but it had become this. Built to store island matriarch Isabella Pleasure's gargantuan collection of 78 RPM Italian opera records. Again, this is a plaque that's outside the store. So like as you're walking in, like, hey, what's in here? This is what the plaque says. Immediately upon her passing in 1949, her two sons sold her collection, valued at $475,000, to an Orlando junk dealer for $150. Refurbished by the Walt Disney Company and Star Trax Enterprises in 1989.
Interesting. I feel like this is starting to sound like the plot for a documentary that's going to be coming out about the dangers of Pleasure Island.
The unpleasant Pleasure Island. The next place I want to talk about is called Jessica's. Now, this was a store themed after Jessica Rabbit from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Outside the storefront was a 30-foot-tall neon sign of Jessica, complete with that swinging leg effect where like one set of lights go on and the other one goes, so it looks like her leg is swinging. Just a straight up Jessica. Weird. I'm going to say Jessica Simpson. A straight up Rabbit Jessica store. Rabbit.
Or... What did they sell in their porn?
Who knows? They did not see.
She's like the hottest cartoon around at the time. What?
In Pleasure Island.
And it's a Pleasure Island. Anyways, keep going. This is all adding to my theory here.
Next was a fireworks factory. It was a pyrotechnics themed restaurant. And the plaque here is dated 1992. Island founder Meriwether Pleasure had a passion for pyrotechnics. In 1922, he persuaded China's premier fireworks inventor, the Bang Master, which, yes, that is what they called me in college, to immigrate to Orlando. The master's lab and storage bunker were built on this spot, and for the next 4 years, Orlando citizens enjoyed the stupendous Independence aerial displays. On July 3rd, 1927, a stray spark from Pleasure's pipe set off an explosion that was heard in Tampa, 82 miles away. Mrs. Pleasure insisted that the wreckage of the factory be preserved as a reminder of, quote, Pleasure's folly, renovated as a joint venture by the Walt Disney Company and the Levy World Company. So Levy is a restaurant company.
Okay.
And by the way, this is maybe a good introduction to this topic of a lot of the restaurants, if not most of them, within now Disney Springs, but along the way, the Village Marketplace in downtown Disney are not Disney owned and operated.
Right.
They're third party, meaning it's another company. Right. They're just operating. So Levy is one of those restaurant companies. So this company, Levy, wound up making this a restaurant at some point. But what I think is interesting about this is a little piece of this that kind of takes it close to home for me, believe it or not, because as part of the storyline was that this was a building where pyrotechnics were manufactured. And it was his cigar, basically, his pipe, that caused an explosion. But the restaurant, when this opened up as like an homage to the old fireworks factory, the props that they use around the restaurant were Grucci family pyrotechnics. And if you're like, who are the Gruccis? Don't you mean Gucci? Well, no, they're kind of my neighbors in a very loose way, because they're from Belport, New York, and your boy went to Belport High School. So every day on the way to work, we would pass by the Grucci house.
Oh.
And as a kid, we didn't really know what that meant. But we also knew that a lot of the fireworks shows that happened on Long Island and even in New York City, and I wouldn't be surprised to hear that the Gruccis were the ones who do like the New Year's Eve fireworks that like Macy's or whoever does. They were like a big deal. That was like the big like story. So
the Gruccis are a real family.
They're a real, that is real. So their actual props were used in the restaurant to make it look like it was a fireworks factory, but it was really their stuff, which I think is so nuts. Yeah. You don't really hear the city of Belport get mentioned.
Yeah.
I think probably only my sister who's listening to this now cares that I'm even saying that, because she also went to that area as well. We're on the map for fireworks. We're on the map in that area for the Grucci family fireworks and for Greg, co-host of That Park Life podcast. New episodes every Wednesday.
When you drive into the city, into the town, I mean.
Oh, I would love that. Mm-hmm. There's also a really bad area of Belport. That's where my high school was. But the good area is where these people lived. Anyway, next is Meriwether's Market. This one's a little bit kind of more on the nose. Meriwether is the guy, right? Meriwether Adam Pleasure. I also like that they gave him a middle name. I try to figure out, like, his initials spell the word map. I don't know if they were going, like, I don't know if they ever played on that or not. Like, you need a map to get around. So Meriwether's Market, named after Meriwether Pleasure. This was just a little small thing. It was eventually replaced by Raglan Road, which has been around for a while. Planet Hollywood. Yeah, that Planet Hollywood. But before it moved to the west side and it became an observatory, or as part of the storyline, an observatory, it existed first on Pleasure Island. There was another place called Eight Tracks. It was a 1970s and 1980s themed dance club.
Man, I missed out. I would have loved that.
It wouldn't. Oh, that sounds like it would have been a good time.
Somebody.
I just see you with like really teased hair. Just
and sweatbands. I'd be wearing sweatbands.
Yeah, of course.
Because you know why? I don't want to feel the heat.
Next is the Videopolis East. Yeah. This was a club that played new wave music on 170 video screens. And this was the official Pleasure Island backstory. Built for island founder Meriwether Pleasure's son, Henry, the, quote, mad genius of Lake Buena Vista. End quote. And Henry's life work, the Pleasure Cellular Automaton. I don't know what that is, everybody. Okay. Henry died thinking his experiments in artificial intelligence had failed. Oh, an automaton. Okay, now that I realize that it's intelligence, I'm back on board here. But when the building was reopened in 1987, the automaton was alive and thriving. In fact, it directed the refurbishing of its home and designed the sophisticated computer hardware that shows itself to best advantage, whatever its best advantage may be. In other words, it sounds like this. Okay, let's digest this, everybody. This sounds like the storyline for this place was a robot that became self-aware and then rebuilt itself to be a place of screens to show the videos that it chose. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Very interesting. I was trying to look up pictures of like what it looked like.
These people were obviously on some type of substance.
From the pictures I'm seeing, it was like sort of... Videopolis was more of like the teen nightclub. Even like the picture, I guess, of like... Yeah, there's basically like a stage, but they just had a bunch of different like screens around. And then they had like these big screens. Like you would, if you're watching a concert almost, and they have the screens on the sides, it kind of looks like that. Yeah, just very interesting. But yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about the Adventurers Club. So this is probably the one that a lot of the Diz nerds listening to this now are like, yes, this is the one. Because this is something that is a more overarching, or part of a more overarching story in different areas of Walt Disney World. But let's break it down a little bit. So the Adventurers Club was a 1930s British-style explorers club featuring a staff of improv performers. Think the Citizens of Hollywood, if you want a reference point, if you remember them. The official plaque outside this location said the following, quote, "This imposing building was designed to house the huge personal library and archaeological trophy collection of island founder and compulsive explorer. Oh, that makes sense. Meriwether Adam Pleasure, end quote for a second. So referring to him as a compulsive explorer makes sense if his initials are MAP. Do you see? It's all coming together now. Okay, back to the quote. Pleasure won the plans in a game of dominoes and attributed them throughout his life to noted architects Sir Edwin Leutens, Charles Rennie Mackintosh, and Elil Saarinen. I don't know who those people are.
Yeah, me neither.
The building became the headquarters for the Adventurers Club, Pleasure's zany band of globe-trotting friends, exotic souvenirs of the members' outlandish expeditions and riotous adventures were displayed on the walls. After Pleasure vanished at sea in 1941, the club was sealed until it was open to the public for the first time in 1989. Of course, 89 being the year that Pleasure Island opened up.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering how this connects to the larger Society of Explorers and Adventurers, so that's something that exists in some other parts of the park. We've talked about it for Jungle Cruise, talked about it for an attraction in Typhoon Lagoon. This is something that just exists in a bunch of other places.
Mm-hmm.
How this interacts or intersects with Meriwether Apple, that's not his name. Maybe it should have been. Meriwether Adam Pleasure, according to lore, he became disillusioned with the Society of Explorers and Adventurers and aimed to create his own group, and that wound up being the Adventurers Club, and that was the organization that was based out of Meriwether's home, Pleasure Island, at Lake Buena Vista.
Buena
Vista. The Adventurers Club was thought to be less stuffy than the SEA and also worked to redeem themselves from the immoral predecessors such as Hightower and the Pillagers Brigade.
Ooh.
So just a little bit more about that. We talked a lot about
like a competing group. Like it was like a, he didn't like the,
it was like an East Coast, West Coast thing. They were having rap battles. They were doing
Bloods
diss tracks
and Crips type thing.
The Adventurers Club members had an official greeting. Do you know what that greeting was?
No.
Kungaloosh. So you'll hear that phrase. You'll probably hear it from a lot of, I feel like this is a lot of crossover with those who are fans of like tiki culture. I feel like there's, that group seems to also be really interested in Adventurers Club / Society of Adventurers and Explorers or the phrase Kungaloosh. But anyway, that was their official greeting. And I'll just have one more connection for you because we talked in depth once about the backstory of the Jungle Cruise and how it was the daughter of Dr. Albert Falls, the granddaughter of Dr. Falls, Alberta Falls, who wound up running the Jungle Navigation Company. But she was not a member of the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, but she was aware of their existence, this Alberta Falls, and she was also familiar with the Adventurers Club, so she actually started using their official greeting, Kungaloosh, which is how Kungaloosh kind of remained in the vocabulary because the Adventurers Club closed, but Jungle Cruise is still open. So every now and then you'll see a reference to Kungaloosh.
Yeah.
And things like currently that Disney puts out.
It says it's similar to the Hawaiian word aloha. It means hello and goodbye. Mm-hmm. And is used in the club's song lyrics and secret salute. So apparently there's like a secret salute too that you do.
So that was the big, kind of the more like real story heavy location here, right? That kind of led to additional characters, if you will, or storylines that got perpetuated in different parts of Disney World. Two more things we'll talk about in Pleasure Island. One was the Mannequins Dance Palace. This was
a lot of dance clubs.
Well, get ready. This was a unique one. This was a techno trance multi-story dance club with a revolving lighted dance floor. Let's let that sink in for a second. There's a lot of adjectives.
Okay.
Techno trance music on a multi-story dance club, or within a multi-story dance club. And then within that multi-story dance club, there were revolving floors that were also lighted. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't enough, in addition to that, it was a club that featured performances by, quote, human mannequins. So people who resembled mannequins would be walking around and dancing.
Weird. Some, like, seriously, y'all, just Google, when you get a chance, just Google photos of some of these things. You're like, this is wild.
Mannequins Dance Party. I'm sorry, Mannequins Dance Palace.
Mannequins.
Yikes.
Let's meet up at Mannequins later. All right, great.
The last thing we'll talk about here is the XZFR Rock and Roller Dome. And this was an item that came up in a This Week in Disney History. So this is one of the things that like sparked my interest in wanting to do a Disney Springs rundown episode because it's like all these things that just existed back then.
Yeah. So the, guess what it is? It's a dance club.
Yeah, who knew? This was a rock-themed dance club where you can roller skate as you danced.
I would like this. This so basically, like your modern roller rink. Yeah. I mean, just they play rock music all the time.
That sounds like a fun time.
I mean, later who didn't have their birthday party at a roller rink? Did you ever have one?
I was deprived. Like a thing.
You all, like at least one year you had your birthday party at a roller rink. Get an amen? Anyone else? Thank you.
Had a bowling alley once where I got to take home a bowling pin, which I had for a very long time,
That's fun.
And the one last note about this era is that later this year, so everything that we're talking about here technically opened in May of 1989 when Pleasure Island officially opened up. But later that year, the entire complex changed its name from Walt Disney World Village to Disney Village Marketplace. So we've gotten a couple. We're like four names deep at this point. It's only 1989.
I know. And I'm like, we're going to go into the 90s now. So let's talk about the 90s. The popularity of Disney World led to further expansion of the Disney Village Marketplace at this time. So in 1996 was when the first World of Disney opened in the Marketplace area. And if you remember, you know, what it looked like at that point. There are now actually four World of Disney locations worldwide. And if you're wondering where they are, obviously Orlando. There is one in Anaheim at the Disneyland Resort, which is like their downtown Disney there. There's one in Paris, France at the Disneyland Paris Disney Village. And there's also one in Shanghai, China at the Shanghai Disneyland Resort, Disney Town. But the largest World of Disney store is now at Disney Springs. They have the largest collection of Disney merchandise because, I mean, it's freaking huge. But anyways, around this time, another rebranding was shaping up. So the next iteration, including combining the Village Marketplace and Pleasure Island into one cohesive complex called, ding, 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 Downtown Disney, which is, I feel like, just what a lot of us know it as because we all went to Disney growing up in the 90s. And so that's like our what we call it now. And the change actually became official on September 7th of 1997. So 1 week later, September 7th, a week later on the 15th of 97, the Downtown Disney West Side expansion officially opened. This was the space that held Cirque du Soleil, Disney Quest, and a Virgin Megastore. Do you remember the Virgin Megastore over there?
I don't remember.
I mean,
do we remember
Virgin Megastores in general? Yeah. I feel like it was like a big deal. It was like, oh my God, they have a Virgin Megastore there. But yeah, so that was September 15th of 97. And the 90s is also kind of when Donald's Dairy Dip ice cream location opened. Do you have any more on Donald's Dairy
Dip? No, I just wanted to put that in there because I love the idea that Donald has its own thing. It had nothing to do with being a duck.
Yeah.
Right? Like it wasn't, it just was the alliteration.
The name just
Donald's
fit.
Dairy Dip.
Donald's Dairy Dip.
I wish they would bring it back.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like the 90s was when all of the like Pleasure Island stuff was huge. I remember going to like Disney Springs, just downtown Disney, like in the 90s and in the daytime, and it's like, oh yeah, these are all the like places for Pleasure Island, and like you can't do that because you're not 18 and whatever, because I'm pretty sure it was 18 and up, wasn't it,
at that point? Yeah, you had to be 18 and up.
Yeah.
And if you were not, you had to be accompanied by an adult.
Yeah, because like some of the places you could kind of like walk through, like some of the outdoor like club areas, I remember being able to like walk through, and it was like, oh well, this is like a club at nighttime in Pleasure Island, but it's like you have to be 18 in order to do it. So I remember thinking when I was younger too, like that Pleasure Island was like, you had to like get on a boat and be taken over to Pleasure Island. It wasn't like part of like Downtown Disney. I remember thinking that and being like, yeah, like when I'm 18 and I come, I want to go to Pleasure Island. And then like all that stuff pretty much closed like by the time I was old enough. So, but anyway, so Greg's going to dip into pretty much like the 90s, like after. So what, you know, what things are looking like now.
We're going to Donald's Dairy Dip into
dip
the 90s.
It. I put my hand up on your hip. When I dip, you dip, we dip. Oh my gosh. Freaking love that song in the 90s.
I forgot about that song. I think
that's
for good
reason.
Freakcasting
Walnut. Anyways.
We talked about the storyline of Disney Springs quite a bit in our part one episode. And although that story was created in the mid 2010s, it was meant to date back to the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all a part of a huge transformation of Disney Springs at that time. So now, throughout all of the years, we're at the point where there are about 90 shops in total at Disney Springs. 90. 90.
Like, I literally read off how many stores there were in the 70s. Yes. Because that's what was there, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. 71 90. Dining options, 7 attractions, and 3 activities. And if you're like me, when I'm reading this, I'm like, well, what do they mean by an attraction?
Yeah.
So the 7 attractions that exist, according to Disney, that's how Disney categorizes these things at now Disney Springs. The list is as follows. The Amphicar Tours, that's from the launch of the Boathouse. Splitsville Luxury Lanes, mm-hmm. the bowling. Marketplace Train Express, Marketplace Fun Fountains, and Marketplace Carousel. 3 separate things. That's the little train that goes around, the carousel, and if you want to play in the fountains, that's considered an attraction.
Right.
The Coca-Cola Polar Bear Photo Op, which is not currently available. I'm not even sure how long ago it was, but it's still listed. It's just not available. And the 7th thing is is what is called the, quote, Aerofile, the world leader in balloon flight. But that's the big old balloon. Yeah. That you can see up in the sky.
Big old Springs balloon.
Here are some specialty shops currently at Springs, and then we'll get into some of our go-to things and then some of your go-to things that you submitted through Instagram. So some things that maybe you didn't know existed at Springs, or you've seen the name, you're not even sure what they sell. So there is a place that's called Everything But Water.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying water correctly? Usually I have people say
water.
Water?
No, you're water. Saying fine.
Water. Water. Everything but water.
Yeah.
They sell designer women's swimwear, so I might be stopping by to get myself a nice two-piece, like, gonna show off that midriff.
I feel like that's like that store. Like, I'm like, did I grow up with one of those stores? I feel like there was one of those stores near me when I was growing up, but one called Everything But Water. Anyways.
There's a Fit to Run, a store for runners, where you can get your feet fitted for a running shoe. Very important if you're running to have your feet fitted to make sure you have a shoe that works for you. Otherwise, your knees gonna hurt and possibly other things. There's a Happy Hound kiosk. This is a place that is sells accessories for dogs.
Yes.
Including trendy outfits, bandanas, and toys and stuff. And it's all adorable, and you must buy something.
Side note, I went to PT today, and this old man in there had his little dog, Lily. And she was dressed in a full-on, like, almost like Catholic schoolgirl outfit looking.
Okay.
It was very funny. I was like, what is happening?
Was it?
And she just had her full outfit on today and was in the PT office with us. So I was like, all right.
The little dog was barking to the tune of Hit Me Baby One More Time.
I mean, full skirt and everything. Anyway.
There's a store called...
Sorry. Also, I'm going to cut you off here. Also, there wasn't Everything But Water in Charleston. It's in the Omni.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. In the, excuse me, the Charleston Place Hotel.
Oh, fancy business.
I knew I'd seen that before. It basically just means it has very expensive swimwear in it.
That's what it is. Designer swimwear, whatever that means. So just a reminder here, these are stores that are not Disney owned and operated like we talked about, right? Next, a store called Johnny Was, like the name Johnny and the W-A-S was. This is how they describe it. Quote, embrace a free-spirited lifestyle with the breezy bohemian looks this boutique has to offer. I probably will never go in there, but if you've ever been into Johnny Was or bought anything, let us know what you got. I'm very curious. I'm not sure it's a real store. It could be a front. Johnny Next is a place called Just Fun Socks, and they sell, you guessed it, fun socks.
Fun socks. You very would go niche, in there.
Right? Very obvious what it is. There's another place called Lefties, the left-hand store, also pretty on the nose. That is a series of products and novelty gifts for left-handed people. So it's great if you've got someone in your family who is left-handed. It's a great place to get some gifts for them. There is a Savannah Bee Company, an eco-friendly shop offering honeybee-inspired gifts with local natural honey.
Yep.
And this has nothing to do with it, even though it sounds like it could be related. This place is called Sugar Boo.
Sugar Boo.
It is a family-owned shop for, quote, whimsical treasures, including handmade jewelry, charming decor, uplifting art prints, and delightful toys.
Sugar Boo.
It's like if it were an Etsy store were real. Yeah. That's how I feel like Sugar Boo is.
But you had to say it like Sugar Boo.
Sugar Boo. last we'll mention here is Wonder Maid. And they describe themselves as treat yourself to incredibly fun artisanal marshmallows in unique flavors. There's a whole marshmallow store.
That's amazing. Marshmallows.
Marshmallows.
Have not had those, but it sounds amazing. I feel like artisanal marshmallows, like...
Is that a thing now?
Yeah, it's become like a pretty popular thing in the last like 5 years or so, I feel like. I'm all about it. I kind of want to like try their stuff, but I wonder how expensive it is. I did look up Johnny Was. They have cute stuff. It's just very expensive.
Okay, let's talk about some of our go-tos in Springs. You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. Yeah. Okay. So there are a few things. I feel like we had a few things, like sames on our list, but one is Deluxe Burger. That's usually like one of the places that Doug and I like to go for sure. We're like, let's go to lunch at Springs. We're going to go to Deluxe Burger. We just love the offerings there. Another must do is World of Disney. Obviously it's the largest Disney store that there is in the whole world. So you got to go. It's amazing too. Like it's, there's so much stuff in there, but I feel like with the big ceilings and how they've redone it recently and stuff, it's, it doesn't feel so claustrophobic to be in there, even though there's like a million people walking around. But
it's truly packed, right? If you ever go in there on a, like a, on a Saturday or a Sunday, if it just started to rain, it's like shoulder to shoulder, but you're right. I think the big or the tall ceilings help. It never feels stuffy.
Yeah.
It definitely feels full. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, oh my gosh, this is too much.
And the checkout lines move quickly. Like, I feel like they can be daunting, but people, it's like, hey, guess what? There are two. There's one, like, on each side of the store, and they do move quickly because they typically have, like, tons of cashiers ready. But I would say look up to when you're in the World of Disney. There's a lot of things to look at, like, above your eye level, not just the merchandise. They have, like, really cool things going on there. So World of Disney. I really like to get milkshakes from Ghirardelli. So if you go to the Ghirardelli store over there, it's kind of expensive, but it's delicious, and you get like free samples of Ghirardelli chocolate if you like kind of walk through it. So we like to go over there. Basin is another store that I like to go into. They have like some Disney scented things. We have a couple. The last time we were there, we went and got some of the pirates scented like candles. Like basically you can make your own, but they have a thing that smells like pirates, and you, I don't even know like what it is, like what it's made of, because it's not like a wax candle. It almost looks like a powder or something. But so you can make your own there and also like sample all the things. It's like go in there and use some of the scrubs, and I mean, you can get bath bombs, all kinds of stuff. So check out Basin. We also always like to go into the Lego store and just to see what they have, because they typically have like crazy stuff in there. And if you're a Lego person, go to the Lego store, check out the stuff they have outside, check out what they have inside. And I just feel like window shopping is fun over there, because it's just like stores that you probably don't have at home, things that you've maybe never seen before. So, I do also like the Vera Bradley store there. Like, go check out Vera Bradley. They have really cool Disney prints if that's your thing. But it's fun just to window shop and get some, like, pastries and stuff, too, while you're there. They have some good, get some candies and some pastries. So, those are our main things. What about you?
We do have a few overlaps. So, yes, Deluxe Burger. And for World of Disney, I just want to mention one thing. That is a location that you can do the mobile checkout on your phone.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind, because there is usually not a line. It's usually a cast member standing there waiting to help somebody.
Yep.
So you can just scan things on your phone, and then when you get to the checkout, if you are an annual pass holder or Disney Vacation Club member and your accounts are linked, it'll automatically apply your merchandise discount. So don't worry, you're still getting that. You can still pay with a gift card. That's all possible.
Yeah, they're kind of just like holding signs. Like you'll see like the mobile checkout sign, and it's basically like you check out and then your app will be like, okay, go find this person. And then they will like give you a bag for your stuff and just make sure like everything's Gucci before you leave and give you like a receipt and all.
Or is everything Gucci?
Gucci.
I also like a specific donut from Everglazed. Still to this day there is the peanut butter explosion. As I like to joke, it's called the explosion because it's the, it goes in that way and out that way. So it is a big, like big glazed donut. And it's got a bunch of stuff. It's got like a chocolate frosting on it. It's got the chocolate drizzle, the chocolate peanut butter chips. Sorry. It's got peanut butter chips. And then in the center of it is more like chocolate frosting with broken up pieces of Reese's
all
peanut butter
the
cups.
Chocolate.
It's just, it's a lot. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of sugar. But boy, is it delicious. Peanut butter explosion. Of course, we also enjoy the Boathouse. We love the Parker House rolls. We love the, oh, so good. We love the wedge salad. I get that all the time. We've got a bunch of good desserts there. I feel like we always have a good server there. I just, we do really enjoy it. Newer on the list is the Summer House, or at least the cookies, because that's the only thing I've had from there. I haven't had an actual sit-down meal.
The food looks really good, too, though, from there.
It does look good.
So
it does look good.
Is also on my list to try when we come next.
And we also go to Aaron McKenna's Bakery quite a bit. It happens to be a place that is vegan and gluten-free. We're not so much there for the vegan part, but we are there for the gluten-free stuff since Nicole has a gluten allergy. It's a specialty bakery, so it's going to be a little bit more expensive. I've actually had the pleasure of visiting all three locations. There's one here in Disney. There's one in New York City and one in LA, and we've been to all three.
Wow.
Formerly called Baby Cakes, but they've now changed mm-hmm. the name to Aaron McKenna's. But we like everything we get in there. They have even just cupcake tops, which is nice.
Yeah.
So if you want like a kind of sampling without having to commit to a whole cupcake, you can get just the tops.
Yeah.
We just like everything that's in there. Everything is really good. A little expensive. But I think it's not Disney owned and operated, but I do think there's an annual pass discount on there too. Just got to ask.
Oh, that's nice.
And although it's been a while, we love T-Rex. Listen, yeah, I know it's a chain restaurant. I understand. We don't go to Rainforest Cafe ever, but we go to T-Rex. And I also wanted just a quick note about T-Rex because the parent company, Landry's, has a rewards card, the Landry Select membership.
Mm.
Now, you do have to pay, but just hear me out on this, everybody. It's $25 to become a member of their royalty program, the rewards program. But when you pay $25 one time, they also give you a $25 bonus, like a welcome gift loaded to your card.
Right.
So when you go to pay, you do get a annual pass holder or Disney Vacation Club member discount if you dine there, even though they're not Disney owned and operated. So you can't use your discount on that check if you're using your $25 reward, mm-hmm. but you're getting $25 off your check.
Right.
Chances are it's more than 10% unless your bill is $250. But in addition to that one-time bonus, like welcome gift you get, every year on your birthday, you also get $25. So if you're a family that goes to T-Rex every year or Rainforest Cafe or other areas, other restaurants that are owned by Landry's, and there are more in the Orlando area and there are across the country. I know because we went to I think it was a Rainforest Cafe in Vegas when we went to our honeymoon because we had our Landry's Select. This, by the way, not a sponsor. I don't get anything out of this. I'm trying to be helpful. Also, and maybe this was the most important part. Don't get me wrong. A dollar amount off your bill is always nice.
Yeah.
But for us, the really helpful thing is whether we had a reservation or not, when you go up to the booth to check in for your reservation, you let them know that you're a Landry's Select member and you show them the card and they automatically put you to the top of the list. And there was one time where we went there without a reservation on a Saturday and we got seated within 10 minutes.
Nice.
Because they just prioritized the Landry's Select member.
And did you fan it out in front of everybody as you walk by?
Hi guys.
I'm getting seated already.
And I'm a little, I'm probably pretty awkward. I was like, I don't know when I'm supposed to tell you, but I am, I do have this card. They were like, oh, okay, cool. And then boop, 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 bop. And they put VIP on the little slip that they use.
Yeah. I was wondering what the other perks were. I'm like, well, if they only give you $25, what are the other perks that they give you?
That's it. Priority. And there's priority some other
seating.
I get emails and stuff that I always ignore, but they'll do specialties, go to this restaurant for an additional this thing off or double points or all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
we just primarily have used it for T-Rex. Nice. So yes, $25 once, but we get $25 every year.
For your B-Day. All right. Well, let's talk about what our followers said. We asked what your favorite thing to do at Disney Springs was. And so we'll go through these. So I'll kick us off. Shelley said cookies and cream cold brew from Everglazed.
Oh.
Which sounds really good. Everglaze is on my list. I really wanted to try that. It's hard to get everything in though. Because when you're, especially when you're going to Springs, it's we're going to go to Deluxe Burger. So it's we're not really making a trip to Everglaze because we just ate.
Well, don't eat it then. Just bring it back.
That's true, to bring it back. I haven't thought about that. Maybe that's something we need to do too. Be like, we're going to go eat lunch before we leave. And then we're going to go to Everglaze and get a thing for the car ride home. Anyways. Good deal.
Devin said, I love seeing the seasonal flavors at the ganachery.
Yeah.
And honestly, the ganachery is a place that I really need to get into more. I just never go in there. It always smells so good from the outside, and it's good to know they have seasonal stuff.
Yeah, and you get to watch them make stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they have award-winning people in there. They've won awards for some of their creations. So.
And we've had a Disney chocolatier on, if you remember.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Jody said, watching the Amphicars from Jock Lindsay's Hangar Bar and... Thigh High Chicken Biscuits and Homecoming. Ooh, that sounds amazing. Yes. Yes, please.
Thigh High Chicken Biscuits.
Thigh High Chicken Biscuits at Homecoming. Mm. Delish.
Our pal Sam, DVC Millennial on Instagram, had voted for Wine Bar George, specifically Wine Bar George's mac and cheese balls as her go-to thing at Springs.
Sounds amazing. Rick says dinner and live music at the Edison.
Oh.
Which, yes. Yes, agreed. Agreed on that one.
And David, hey Rick, hey David, you two
Rick,
know each other?
Hey David.
David said Gideon's cake slice when he has about 2 hours to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, that line forms
that line
early
does.
In the day and it remains.
Does. And it's in the dead of the heat. It's in the dead of the sun, basically. So bring an umbrella, but it's good. It moves when it starts moving. Erica said live music and Eddie Maserati.
Now, have you heard of Eddie Maserati?
I have not. What's the backstory there?
Okay. So I asked her because I was like, I don't know who Eddie Maserati is. So I looked him up. He is someone that is not a Disney character. He is a guest who just routinely shows up in wild outfits. And Erica was telling me that she's gotten pictures with him, that the band that was playing there the night gave him a shout out. He's just out there dancing and he's in these extravagant outfits and he goes by Eddie Maserati. Google it, Maserati, like the
I'm
car.
Looking it up.
Yeah, look him up because he
Eddie
is
Maserati
real life.
Disney. Let's look. He's basically like the cowboy in New York City.
Like the naked cowboy?
Yeah, the naked cowboy. That's basically him. I have seen pictures of him. I do know who she's talking about here. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen him in person, but yeah. I mean, he's an older dude.
I'm looking at is he has a bedazzled, I think that might be a Maserati logo. I don't know.
Yeah. He does wear like
Ferrari.
But he
has on very short shorts.
He is always, pretty much every picture I'm seeing, he has very short shorts on. This man is probably in his 70s, if not older.
I would say he's in his prime.
I mean,
he's peaked. He's peaking right now.
He's definitely like a character. Crazy. There's a lot of people that have posted pictures with him. Okay, anyways. So there you go.
Eddie
you learn something every day. Eddie
Tag
Maserati,
us in
everyone.
It because I want to see more current Eddie Maserati photos.
Live music and Eddie Maserati. Awesome.
Amber's like you. She likes to check out the Lego store, but specifically the sculptures there.
I like to see like if they've changed or what they have because it's crazy. You're like, how is that made with Legos? Kyla? I'm assuming it's Kyla. And that we didn't just miss a letter there and it's
no,
not Kyla.
No, it is Kyla.
Okay. Kyla said drinks and music at City Works. Yeah, that's another good spot.
At KPS Corner, it says eat ramen from Morimoto Street Food. And I always forget like that counter there. You can get like a quick service version of Morimoto.
Yeah. And lastly, Molly, my girl Molly from Molly Poppins, says arrival day tradition at the Boathouse is rosé, truffle fries, and firecracker shrimp. Amen, girl.
Ooh.
That sounds incredible.
Ooh, that sounds good.
And I love that that's an arrival day tradition for y'all. Keep it going. Tag us. Oh my gosh. Send us pictures. I feel like she's going soon too. Was it her?
Coming later this month, Molly. Yeah. Miss Molly. Good golly, Miss Molly will be down here having her firecracker shrimp, her truffle and rosé.
Molly, when you get down here, I need you to tag us in that for your arrival day tradition at Springs.
So here we are at the end of part two of Disney Springs Rundown. So we talked all about the big, long storyline of part one. And we talked about all the different changes that have happened across Springs and then what's there now, 90 plus shops, 71 dining locations.
Yeah.
And all kinds of, there's just a ton of stuff. I think the number one piece of advice is just go through the list. Like you can pull it up on the My Disney Experience app. If you filter to Disney Springs, you can see, you can categorize it by dining locations, retail locations. And just see what you might want to do.
Take some chunks out. All right. Greg's going to kick us off with some music before we leave. But before we do that, if you like what you heard today, feel free to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You can leave us a review on iTunes. That way others can locate us easier in the world of all the Disney pods out there. You can follow along with us on Instagram and TikTok at That Park Life Podcast. If you want to leave us a question, you can do so on our Instagram highlight. It's Ask Beth and Greg. We do love to answer your questions there. If you want to follow along our personal Instagram accounts, I am at The Real Beth McDonald.
And I am at The Disney Greg.
If you want to submit a request for an episode, share a cast member, magical moment, you can do a Magicgram over there. You can look at other episodes that we've done with a quick search on our website. It's thatparklifepodcast.com. Many things you can do over there. Lastly, if you want to join our lovely gang of Diz nerds, as I like to say, you can head over to patreon.com/thatparklifepodcast and get lots more content from truly yours. We have lots of different packages over there that you can sign up for. You can get on our Discord channel. You can listen to our Pat Chats live because we have some fun stuff over there. But anyways, you can do all of that over at patreon.com/thatparklifepodcast. And we appreciate our friends on the Patreons because it helps us to be able to continue to do what we do here. Don't forget, lastly, our Amazon shopping list. Our link will be in the description of that. Just things that we have thought of that maybe you haven't for your trips, or if you'd like to know what we like to use for our trips to the parks, you can check out that. We do get a kickback on that. No expense to you, but it does give us a little bit of kickback as well. All right, Greg, what you got for us to end this episode?
So instead of a quote, we'll do what we did for part one of Disney Springs. So we'll play a little clip from the Disney Springs area music, and we'll leave it up to you. Send us a message if you recognize what song this is. So until next week, everyone, we'll see you later.
We bid you adieu. Thanks for being here, everyone. We'll see you next week.